Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 9th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Maria Offer will highlight her Monday evening Juno World Affairs Council presentation about human rights in Guatemala. We'll talk with Malin Babcock and Jerry Burnett about the Territorial Sportsman's Scholarship Contest. Colette Costa will tell us about Tuesday's KRNN Spotlight Concert way off Broadway. We'll get a preview of Tuesday's Interfaith Council's meeting featuring author Stuart Cohen. And Amanda Fiore and Laura Forbes will tell us about Tuesday's Poetry Out Loud event. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A Native American organization has launched an online business tool to enhance the way entrepreneurship is done in Indian country. The National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development's Native Edge is a web-based 24/7 business ecosystem. Gary Davis, president and CEO of the National Center, says the Native Edge portal is groundbreaking.
I think it's so exciting. I think by our embracing technology to really engage at a much higher level than we've ever done before, it's going to drive opportunity. It's going to make possibility more accessible for our people. And I think that that's what's important. We have to be thinking outside of the box. We have to meet people where they are. We have to engage them using the means of engagement that they use.
The subscription-based program includes four main components. Users can access it for hiring, networking, and training. They can also connect to a database for federal and corporate procurement opportunities. NativeEdge.com went live today at the organization's National Reservation Economic Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada. The annual conference, which kicked off this morning, is billed by organizers as the largest American Indian economic gathering. It draws thousands of people like Native business and tribal leaders, federal officials, and others to focus on economic development, networking, and business matchmaking. Tune in this week to National Native News for coverage of Res 2015. A student at Red Cloud Indian School has been awarded the Horatio Alger Scholarship. As Jim Kent reports, the competitive award supports deserving young people who have overcome challenges in their lives in order to pursue higher education.
Jamie Ray Richards is a senior at the Pine Ridge Reservation's Red Cloud Indian School. She's also manager of the girls' basketball team. And now, she's a 2015 Horatio Alger Scholar. The 17-year-old was one of two dozen South Dakota high schoolers to receive the prestigious award after submitting an essay on overcoming adversity in her life. Jamie also wrote about a role model who supported and inspired her and how she plans to prevent further challenges from holding her back. Key to her success in the competition and in her life, says Jamie, has been her spirituality.
Through hardship, I always turn to prayer because I know it's what I rely on to get through struggles and stuff. And I feel sad or if I'm feeling a little lost, I can go to sweat and I'll feel better and I know it's helped me so much throughout my life.
Jamie also credits her grandmother, Francine Redwillow, as her inspiration. She's a Lakota woman, says Jamie, who can handle any situation she encounters. The $7,000 Horatio Alger Scholarship will be used toward fulfilling Jamie's goal of becoming the first person in her family to finish college. Although she hasn't pinned down her career choice yet, Jamie Ray Richards is focusing on health care. She also hopes to return to the Pine Ridge Reservation after receiving her degree to help her people. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Cherokee Nation will hold general elections at the end of June, and the nation reports 36 candidates have filed to run for principal chief, deputy chief, and 8 tribal council seats. Principal Chief Bill John Baker has announced that he will run for the position again, as well as Chad Smith, who held the office from 1999 to 2011. William Forkiller, a member of the Oklahoma House of Representatives, has also announced he will run for the position, as will Charlie Soap, husband of former Principal Chief Wilma Mankiller. All Cherokee Nation citizens must be registered to vote by March 31st, and absentee ballot requests must be submitted by May 8th. Citizens in need of more information can visit the Cherokee Election Commission online at www.cherokee.org. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4th, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians with this message for American Indians 50 and over. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 9th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio by Jim Clark of the Juno World Affairs Council and Maria Offer. Welcome, Jim and Maria.
Thank you.
Nice to have you in on this beautiful afternoon. So you will be giving a presentation tonight, Maria, and you'll be talking about human rights in Guatemala. Looking forward to hearing about that. Why don't we start, Jim? Give us a little talk about JWAC 101.
Well, the Juno World Affairs Council is a tax-exempt, nonpartisan organization that brings people to talk to Juno on international matters. And we're lucky that Maria is actually from Juno and will be talking tonight at 5 o'clock in the KTOO studios about international matters. So we invite everybody to come.
And you mentioned that this will be Maria's third talk. Is that correct?
I think it's the third talk.
Does that sound right, Maria? Okay. And so, Maria, you are a reading specialist here in town. Will you tell us a little bit about your work as a reading specialist?
Yes, I work with kids who have struggled with learning how to read. I've worked with kids from preschool up to high school age. And a lot of times families come to me when their child's in like first, second, or third grade, and say they're still having trouble reading, and I design programs to help them get up to grade level.
Okay, and what drew you to that line of work?
Languages are my passion, and I really love working with children. I started out as a high school teacher. I have a Master's of English from the Breadloaf School of English out of Middlebury, Vermont, and I found a lot of my high school students had difficulties reading, a couple years behind grade level, and so I got my reading specialist degree, literacy leadership degree, and then I started working with younger and younger kids so I can help them at an age when they really can help get them up to level.
Okay, and you also have a passion for travel, and you've taken your work as a reading specialist to various countries, including Guatemala. What drew you there the first time?
Well, the first time I was in Guatemala was in the 80s, and I had heard a talk about what was going on in Central America when I was in college, and on that day I decided I would learn Spanish, and I've kept that up. It's been a great direction in my life. It's given me a lot of fulfillment and just helped me learn what's going on in Latin America and get to know the people there.
And do you work as a reading specialist when you travel as well?
Yes, I've done volunteer work. I have organized literacy projects in Chiapas, Mexico, which is right over the border of Guatemala, and also in Peru. I donate children's books, and I've done art projects with kids in, let's say, rural villages. I really find that rewarding.
And it must be nice to have something to share with those communities that you visit, really make your travel rewarding.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I enjoy it.
And so tonight you're going to be focusing on human rights in Guatemala. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it's a very important topic as anywhere, but Guatemala of all countries has had a lot of challenges economically and internationally, and then the starting in the 50s and then throughout the 80s, there was a civil war, and I was in Guatemala doing volunteer work in the 80s. So I saw a lot of fear and sadness, and you know, due to the atrocities, so I didn't firsthand witness some of the aspects of the war. I saw a lot of secondhand effects of it, and it's always been on my heart. And so I've gone back and done some work in Guatemala and revisited it. So hence the title of the talk, as well as I'm revisiting the human rights issues in Guatemala.
Okay. Jim, how long have you been involved with Juno World Affairs Council?
Well, I was initially with it about 20 years ago for a few years, and then I've just recently come back and been on the board of directors for about 5 years and been the president for the last two.
Okay. So you're passionate about the topics like this. Why is it important that we study human rights in Guatemala?
Well, it's not just human rights in Guatemala that itself is important. It's that we have a much better understanding about people around the world. I have a daughter who is teaching in Korea right now who speaks Korean and Chinese and Japanese. And that brings kind of a worldview to our home. And I've just always been interested in international affairs. And it's wonderful to find so many people around Juneau who are also interested in world affairs. And we always encourage people to come to things like this so that they can learn something that they probably didn't know before. I am very much looking forward to Maria's talk because this is not a subject I know very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be at 360 here in the KTOO TV studios, 360 North, downstairs. And what time does that start, Jim?
5 o'clock. And we're anxious for everybody to take an hour off and come in and hear this talk. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. And then those are also archived. These presentations are archived on the 360 North website. Is that right?
That's right. And then they're rebroadcast several times. But it's nice to come and hear it in person because you have the chance to ask questions.
Yeah. And is there an admission cost?
No. Admission is absolutely free. We do several fundraisers and have a number of sponsors who allow us to bring people and take care of their expenses and have them speak to us.
Okay. Can you give us one highlight about something that you'll be speaking about tonight, Maria?
The most recent events in Guatemala is there's an ongoing trial for the former General Rios Montt, and I think that's a really important part of world news. And as Jim said, it's really important to be aware of what's going on in the world. And so in recent events in Guatemala, it's very important. They're trying to bring him to trial for genocide and crimes against humanity.
Okay. Maria Offer, Jim Clark, thank you so much for coming in today. See you at 5 o'clock tonight down in at 360.
Hey, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Looking forward to it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 9th of March, 2015. It's the birthday of Mickey Spillane, born New York City, 1918, Irish-American, grew up in a rough neighborhood, New Jersey. Father was a bartender. The boy read Herman Melville, Alexander Dumas, by the time he was 11. Invented ghost stories for his friends. Went off to college, never finished. Worked as a lifeguard for a time. Then got a job selling ties at Gimbel's department store. He wrote stories for the comic books, for Superman, Captain Marvel, Batman, and then joined the Army the day after Pearl Harbor, was stationed in Mississippi, got married. He and his wife wanted to buy a country home in Newburgh, New York, and so he set about to write about a detective, a character named Mike Hammer. It took him 19 days to write a novel called I, the Jury. Came out in 1947, became a huge bestseller, sold more than 8 million copies. Time magazine wrote that the book put sadism within reach of the average pocketbook. Mickey Spillane wrote more than 30 novels. By the year 1980, 7 of the top 15 all-time best-selling fiction books were Mickey Spillane books. Critics said his books were garbage. Spillane said, "I see that, but it's good garbage," and he described his work as the chewing gum of American literature. He said, "I'm not an author, I'm a writer. Authors want their names down in history. I want to keep the smoke coming out of the chimney." And it was on this day in 1913, Virginia Woolf delivered the manuscript of her first novel, The Voyage Out, to the publisher. She'd been working on it for 7 years. She'd written 5 drafts of the novel, including 2 different versions that she worked on simultaneously, and then rewrote the entire novel one more time, almost from scratch. It came out to favorable reviews, and in the book she had introduced the character Clarissa Dalloway, which she wrote an entire novel about. years later. Mrs. Dalloway, 1927. Here's a poem for today by Jane Kenyon, entitled Happiness. There's just no accounting for happiness or the way it turns up like a prodigal who comes back to the dust at your feet, having squandered a fortune far away. And how can you not forgive? You make a feast in honor of what was lost and take from its place the finest garment which you saved for an occasion you could not imagine, and you weep night and day to know that you were not abandoned, that happiness saved its most extreme form for you alone. No, happiness is the uncle you never knew about who flies a single-engine plane onto the grassy landing strip, hitchhikes into town, and inquires at every door until he finds you asleep mid-afternoon, as you so often are during the unmerciful hours of your despair. It comes to the monk in his cell. It comes to the woman sweeping the street with a birch broom, to the child whose mother has passed out from drink. It comes to the lover, to the dog chewing a sock, to the pusher, to the basket maker, and to the clerk stacking cans of carrots in the night. It even comes to the boulder in the perpetual shade of pine barrens, to rain falling on the open sea, to the wine glass, weary of holding wine. Happiness, a poem by Jane Kenyon from her collection Otherwise, New and Selected Poems, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years, and by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 9th, 2015. It's about 17 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio by Jerry Burnett. He's the president of the Territorial Sportsman, and Breida Rice. Welcome, Jerry and Breida. Nice to have you on the show today.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. So, Jerry, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about what the Territorial Sportsman's Incorporated, or Inc., is all about?
Okay, Territorial Sportsman is the first sportsman's organization founded in Alaska in 1945, so this is the 70th year it's been around. We've been doing the Golden North Salmon Derby since 1947.
Wow.
And since 1953, we've been using the proceeds from the Salmon Derby to fund scholarships for students from the local high school to who go on primarily at the beginning for science-oriented wildlife management, but a number of them, they've come back as engineers, they've come back as fish and game biologists. We've had families where we have multiple generations that have received it, and we just had a person retire from as a director from the Department of Fish and Game who was family members of had the scholarship, so it's been around a long time.
And you were saying, Jerry, that that's how it was sort of initially designed, right? Was in the hope that these students would maybe go somewhere, glean knowledge, right, and then come back and share it with the community.
Yes, and we encourage people, and we do look for people that we expect to come back to Juno with the scholarship. Territorial Sportsman also does a few other things, like we built all the cabins and the marine parks here, Shelter Island, Lincoln Island, St. James Bay, and we sponsor the middle school shooting team and a local high school's trap team and air rifle teams in local communities like Angoon.
Okay. Breida, will you tell us a little bit about some of the scholarships that you offer?
The sportsmen offer two scholarships now, two different kinds. The first is the four-year scholarship for graduates of high school this year who are going on to college, and that's offered to people who are graduating from any of the high school programs in Juneau. It can be Homebridge, Raven School, or any of the three public high school programs. The other scholarship is a vocational technical award, and it's given to young people who have at some point completed their high school education, which means they could be graduating this year or in the past, and they can have finished their education with either a baccalaureate degree or completed the GED. Either one is fine. And this scholarship is awarded to kids anywhere in Southeast Alaska who need a leg up, a little bit of help for any kind of continuing education that is less than 4 years. In the past, some young men in Wrangell won the award. It's only been offered since 1998, so it doesn't have a really long track record, but it's been offered for things like an individual fly fishing class for somebody who's going to be a professional guide.
Okay.
We've offered it and awarded it to Juneau kids who have gone out and gotten their A&P for aviation. And a couple of people have attended the AvTech program in Seward, the construction management program in Juneau. We haven't had any graduates yet from the CNA program at UAS.
Okay.
But kids that are taking anything from one computer course or a couple of classes that will make them eligible for the next grade up in their state level of employment, anything that these young people need help with to get them to the next leg that will make them a better employee in their hometown. And again, it's offered to people from Ketchikan up through Skagway.
Okay, and so how many, remind us, how many scholarships there are in total?
3 4-year, but the VocTech is based on the number of applicants and the students' need.
Okay.
So it can vary from 1 to 3.
Okay. And I found you right away today when I Googled Territorial Sportsman Scholarship. I found you right away. It took me to your webpage. Is that the best place for people to go for information?
Yes.
Okay. And one of the main ways you make money for this, is this correct, Jerry, is through the Golden North Salmon Derby?
Yeah, the Golden North Salmon Derby, which this year will be August 14th, 15th, and 16th. People turn in the fish, and we sell the fish. And this past year, I think it brought in around $20,000. Some years it's been in the 40s. But we've put away some money, and we've given $1,600,000-plus in scholarships over the years from the investment earnings and the proceeds of the fish sales.
That must feel very fulfilling.
Yes, it does.
It's really wonderful. We are lucky to have the proceeds of the Derby because the proceeds each year just about cover the cost of writing the checks. So our endowment is growing at a reasonable rate.
Okay. So again, if people want more information, they can go to your website to find out more. Is there anything else you'd like to share about the association or the scholarship?
The scholarship applications, both of them, have mostly been emailed to the counselors in the high schools all around Southeast. So anyone that might be the easiest place for them to get them. I checked on our website this morning and didn't see that the scholarship applications had been made available there yet, but I know that's the plan shortly.
And deadlines?
The deadline for the 4-year scholarship is March 27th for the paper, and the evening of April 21st is a short interview of each candidate. But the vocational technical scholarship is a less rigorous application, and it's due April 10th.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Breida Rice, Jerry Burnett. Thanks for coming into the studio today.
You're welcome.
This is Bird Note. It's a cool morning in the ranch country of the West. A black-billed magpie cuts a dash amidst the open habitat. Flying parallel to the road, with deliberate wing beats, it flashes its black and white wings like a semaphore, its tail fluttering behind, the plumes longer than its body. The March trees are still bare. The magpie's raspy call is bold as brass. Like its nest, a rough, bulky sphere of sticks nearly 3 feet across, with entrance ports on the sides, sitting in plain view. Black-billed magpies are omnivorous, like their close relations, the jays and crows. They'll even hitch a ride on a steer to pluck ticks from its hide. Which goes some way to explaining why magpies are such survivors. The bison herds they once depended upon are greatly diminished, and they've a long history of run-ins with ranchers. Even so, they've persisted. And when the morning light catches one, perching just right, its wings and tail shimmer with iridescent blue and green. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Girls, a 5, 6, 7, 8!
KRNN Spotlight Music Series presents Way Off Broadway, a spectacular evening of live Broadway songs by members of the cast of Chicago, including Colette Costa, Erica Lee, Felisa Thole, Enrique Bravo, and Shona Osterhout, hosted by Ben Brown.
The 7:30 show is sold out, so we're running a second show at 6 p.m. this Tuesday at the Gold Town. Tickets at KRNN.org.
All right. Speaking of that show,
how many people have called or texted me in the last 2 weeks and just said .org?
The one and only Colette Costa.
Oh God, help!
Way
us all.
Off Broadway
tomorrow
night.
Wouldn't it be awesome if there's another one of me, but that she was like a nice one and patient and.
Try it right now.
No. What? Okay.
So tell us about how this was inspired. Way Off Broadway, it's tomorrow night at the Gold Town Theater. It starts at, well, there's two shows now. There's a 6 o'clock, and, of course, there's a 7:30. What inspired this, Colette?
Well, the other day I was talking to a friend of mine, and, you know, Cheryl and I sit together and we just would kind of try to figure out what the KRNN Spotlight Series is going to be. You know, it's a combination of KRNN and Gold Town and what have we done before, what, you know, do we want to do something like that or different? Anyway, so we're bouncing out ideas. And actually, I'm going to give credit where credit is due. She came up with the idea. She said, what about a Broadway show? Because you guys have had a little bit of Broadway for I don't even know how long. 15,
right.
10, it's got to be a long 20 years maybe, right? So we had never done one, and I thought, well, Flossie and the Hey, let's try it. And we were just coming off of the Chicago show, and I kind of threw it out on the back porch to see what the cat lapped up, and we had a couple takers, and bloody, bloody blah. And so.
Yeah, and yeah. Chicago, what a success.
You had what a success.
A lot of fun with that, right?
All because of those hot girls in underwear. It was like about time that Perseverance finally caught on to my keys to success. Surround mediocre talent like myself with attractive, scantily clad young men and women shaking their can-cans. It worked.
Speaking of all that, what should we expect tomorrow night?
Well, we wanted it to be more than just a cabaret. We didn't, not that there's anything wrong with cabaret, but we didn't want it to be just a review of songs and people singing. And so, and as is the style with these spotlight songs, these spotlight series, it's a mix of interview and songs. And so there'll be some mild discussion about, I don't even know what, we haven't gotten that far.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Brown is the host, so I'm sure he won't have a problem coming up with something to say. And so, you know, we probably won't have much to say about it. I don't know why we picked the songs we picked. There are 5 principal performers, and we are sort of on our own to pick songs. So it's a really strange mix of styles and genres and time periods. There will be 4 big numbers, group numbers with dancing and the whole 9 yards. So it's going to be lively. And I'm doing just nothing but, like, damaged women songs, a lot of yelling. And Robert Cohen at the piano, who I just got to tell you, it's just ridiculous, ridiculous how fast he can pick something up. It's just insane. I don't like to think about it. Cause
he's a very talented individual.
Yeah, you know. Yes, fine. But we also have Enrique Bravo, who is currently in The Odd Couple over at Perseverance Theater, along with Boston Christopher and James
Sullivan.
Thank you. Great play. Just opened the other week. I guess just opened this last weekend, so go see that. So Lisa Thole and Erica Lee. Erica and her hubby own the Red Lady Jewelry Store there on Franklin. Shona Osterhout, who directed Chicago, going to be in it. And then we have 7 or 8 other chorus people who are going to be joining in at different part, so it'll be a mix of, you know, solos, duets, ensembles, dance numbers. Everybody gets a break. Alaska Brewing Company is going to have beer. And, you know, if you think Broadway songs are super obnoxious, Disney-voiced women complaining about how difficult their middle-class white lives are, it's not going to be quite like that, other than both of the songs that I do. So, it's a great mix of stuff. It really is. It's been really interesting.
Okay. So this, you know, again, there's 2 shows tomorrow night.
Yeah, we sold out. We sold out that 7:30 show pretty quick. And so I got all the principals and all the players to agree to add an earlier show at 6. And we'll cut. It'll be a nice little experiment. We're going to cut down on the talking and cut out the intermission. So it'll be a little more of a down and dirty type show, but you're going to get all the entertainment that we can pack into that little theater. Oh my God. There'll be goats and snacks, and if you bring a goat and a snack. I mean, I've got some ravioli in the freezer, but probably not enough for everyone.
Tickets are at krnn.org.
Yeah, please, don't come down to the stage to the theater for tickets. I don't have them. They don't give them to me because they don't trust me, for good reason.
Or you could wait to get them at the door if there are any left.
If you're going to try that, I'm going to recommend trying it at the 6. Well, don't bother at the 7:30 show.
Right.
It's sold. So, yeah, if you want to try and get them at the door, I would get there by 5:15. Actually, you can't even. Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm not in charge. Get them online. If you don't know how to get them online, call Scott Burton. 586-3660. Look, that's someone calling right now for a ticket. Call up the station, figure out, you guys need to have physical tickets. I'm just going to tell you that straight up. We'll work on that for the next show, I promise. Get them online. It's super easy. KRNN.org, 6 o'clock, tomorrow night. Don't believe the posters. I made them, and I'm dumb.
Oh, yeah, they do say Monday, don't they?
Yeah, totally.
That's funny. See you tomorrow night, Colette. Thanks for coming on the show.
Bye.
live to simper. Lights can't hear, sun's a ball of fire. Don't bring a cloud around, real don't tell me not to die. I've simply got to. If someone takes a spell, it's me, not you. I told you you're allowed to rent on my parade.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 9th, 2015. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And I've been joined now in the studio by Pat McClure of the Interfaith Council. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. And your guest at your next meeting, Stuart Cohen, author Stuart Cohen. Welcome, Stuart.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the show. Pat, let's start with you. What is the Interfaith Council?
Originally in town, there was a cooperative church council, and it kind of divided up so that the cooperative church council is now the cooperative Christian church council, and then those are the folks who will do are now doing the Lenten luncheons on Thursdays at Northern Light and provide activities during Advent, like the annual Advent concert and the Advent luncheon, and those communities that aren't Christian have this interfaith council, but the Christian group is part of that as well. So they're all of us together. So Sikhs, Baha'is, Unitarian Universalists, as I am a member of. So that the interfaith council meets monthly on the second Tuesday of the month from noon to 1 by our very generous host, Northern Light Church, that always welcomes us.
And your title is facilitator?
I am the new facilitator.
Okay.
And even though I talk funny and talk fast, I have to, you know, pull that in every once in a while, but yeah, that's my job.
Among other hats that you wear in the community.
Yes.
Okay, Stuart Cohen, you are working on your fourth book. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
No, I finished my fourth book.
Oh, congratulations.
Actually, it's my fifth book. My fourth novel is coming out in next month, and I'm just starting to research the sixth novel.
Okay.
I have a store here in Juneau. I import from Asia and South America. And
which store is that?
Invisible World.
And where is it located?
It's on South Franklin Street. In the tourist zone, the red zone.
And what I haven't had a chance to read your stuff. What do you write about?
Oh, all kinds of things. I mean, I wrote a police novel about a policeman who's investigating a murder he committed. My newest book is called This Is How It Really Sounds. It's about a faded rock star who's lost all his money, a kind of disgraced financier and the world extreme skiing champion circa 1992. They're about all different things.
And mostly fiction or both?
Only fiction.
Okay. Yeah. And Pat, how did Stuart come to your attention?
Well, prior to my taking over the position as the facilitator, he was on the docket as the next speaker, and I said, well, who is this guy? So I had contact information, and we went and had coffee the other day, and he filled me in on his views on climate change in regards to as a moral imperative that we need to address.
Okay.
So that's what Stuart will be educating us about tomorrow.
And when did that become of interest to you, Stuart?
Well, I think like many people, I've been following, you know, the kind of growing, increasingly dire reports about climate change and projections about climate change in the newspaper. And it got to the point where I would lie awake at night worrying about it on a few different levels. One, worried about what was going to happen with my children, what kind of world they were going to inherit. And also the deep wrongness of massive extinction of species. One of the consequences is ocean acidification, which could well wipe out most life in the oceans. And just all that seemed profoundly wrong. And so finally, I decided to, there was a meeting of people who felt this. I saw a meeting of people who want to do something about the climate. And I went to that meeting, and like most social movements, it's like five people in a room. I interviewed an organizer once for one of my books, and she said she went to a meeting and she was the only person who showed up, and the person who called the meeting said, okay, that makes you the chairman. So I felt like kind of what I felt most comfortable doing was reaching out to other people with religious backgrounds to look at this as a moral issue, because I taught Sunday school for 10 years. I've read the Bible. I continue to read the Bible. And so it's an area I feel comfortable with. And I felt like I wanted to kind of see how people in other faiths felt about it also.
Okay. Now, is this something that you explore in your writing as well?
I'm working on a book now. I've just started researching a book that's going to be involved with climate change. But in the past, no.
Okay. Tell us about the time and location, Pat.
The location will be Northern Light United Methodist Church downtown, and the time is noon to 1 o'clock. Acknowledging that it's lunchtime, if folks want to come a little early, 11:45 or so, then there's usually some snacks and stuff, and people can socialize, and we get started at noon.
Okay. Stuart, can you give us one example of maybe a talking point that you're going to explore?
I guess the main talking point is in all the different, as I've started to talk with other faith groups such as Unitarians, the Catholic Diocese here, and with Mormons, and they refer me to their kind of official church positions on stewardship of the climate, all of them have a great respect for and love for the sort of majesty of creation, which we are presently destroying, basically. And when you're talking about maybe 30 to 50% of all species being extinct in 35 years, that's destroying creation. And they feel that uniformly that that's a sacrilege. And also it's an issue of justice, because the people who suffer the most are going to be the world's poor. And we will all suffer in the long run, but the first people who will suffer the most extremely are poor people who have done the least to cause it. So it's a matter of justice. And I don't think anybody's religious book says, hey, the heck with the poor. They got born in the wrong place, you know.
Right.
So,
well, it sounds very interesting. Pat, the details once more.
Tuesday, the 10th of March, thank you, at noon to 1 at Northern Light Church.
Well, it sounds very interesting. Thank you for coming in today, facilitator of the Interfaith Council, Pat McClear, and Stuart Cohen. Looking forward to your talk tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
You could drive by here, you could miss this place. It's always come down to just a little simple fate. Her heart was red earth, her house was red stone. I can still feel her spirit rattle down in my bones. Her skin, it was brown, her eyes like the night. Her hair was like ravens in the mid-air of flight. Black wings that danced with rhythm and rhyme, like the jingle you get out of quarters and dimes. There's thistles and thorns, there's stickers and briars, there's poets, thieves and cheaters and liars. There's horses for riding, fences to mend, and I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. She was a moment of grace for this poor wretched fool, but my heart was so hardened and I was so cruel. Now loneliness, my house guest, I'll never be free. You eat everything and then refuse to leave. There's thistles and thorns, there's stickers and briars, there's poets and thieves and cheaters and liars. There's horses for riding, fences to mend, and I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. Now at one morning's wake, that it was fair, I looked all around, but she just was not there. Like a dream that evaporates up with the sun, the
love I once knew, knew it was done. There's thistles and thorns, there's stickers and briars, there's poets, thieves and cheaters and liars. There's horses riding, fences to mend, and I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. Now the night is so long and my bed is so cold, and my arms seem so useless when there's no one to hold. Young men, don't you do the things that I did, or your heart will be empty like the howl of the wind. You know I made her cry, you know I caused her pain. I'm a lonely old man who walks with a cane. There's horses for riding, fences to mend, and I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. So I doubt if I'll ever get back here again.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 9th, 2015. It's about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined by the Poetry Out Loud, a couple members from that team, including Amanda Fiore. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi.
You're one of the coordinators. We'll talk about that in a second. And also Mava Ordaz. Thanks
Hello.
For coming in. Last year's champion of Poetry Out Loud. Is that correct?
Yes.
Congratulations, and thanks for being on the show. So, Amanda, tell us a little bit. You're the local coordinator, but you work with the Alaska State Council on the Arts and Nancy DeCherney. Tell us about how that all works.
So, Nancy DeCherney hired me in October to be the Poetry Out Loud coordinator for Juno. So, I work with Laura Forbes from the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Laura, Nancy, and I basically were like the powers that be. I'm the one that had to call all the schools and all the teachers, make sure that they were doing classroom competitions, school competitions, district competitions and then got them all to the regional competitions. And now I have my 10 state finalists, and we have Mava here who competed last year, and she won the state finals and then went on to the national contest in D.C. And so she's back here again, and that's pretty exciting, and it's just a really great program to work on. I've been really having a lot of fun this year working on it.
Yeah. How many years do you think they've been doing this?
This is the 10th year.
10th year. Very cool event. Mava, how did you get involved in the first place?
So I first heard about it through my school. I was very fortunate that my school, West High School, we have the entire school participate, and it's actually a requirement, and it's a graded requirement for us. So everybody has to memorize a poem and recite it, and then if they want, they can compete within each of our classes to go to the school-wide competition. And so I started off doing that. I started off my sophomore year. I made it to finals in my school competition. But I didn't win, and so I wasn't able to go to the regional competition. So I told myself I'm going to do better next year. And so last year, like a month before, I already had my poems picked out, and I was memorizing them, and I made sure I had all the motions down. And I put in a lot of effort because I wanted to succeed the second time around.
So did you have an appreciation for literature before this happened?
I read a lot, but in terms of poetry. Not so much. That was something, I think Poetry Out Loud really got me into that. And because I was spending so much time looking at all these different poems and picking out the ones I wanted to, that I felt a connection to, learning about all these different poems and the poets really got me interested in poetry. And for a lot of my friends as well. I know Poetry Out Loud, I think, has had a big impact on schools in terms of getting teenagers especially, more involved in, learning poems, reading them, analyzing them. And I think this program has been very successful in doing that.
Yeah, and how about for you? What's it done for you specifically?
I think one thing that's really helped me with is stage presence and confidence. I hadn't done many, I'd done debate before that, but I hadn't done many, standing up in front of an audience of 100, 200 people and reciting. That was something that I hadn't done before, so that was an excellent experience for me, and it's really given me that confidence to be able to go out and do that, whether I'm doing a poetry recitation or speech or I'm debating, and that's been really helpful in that aspect. It's also really helped me, as I just talked about, and helping me gain a deep appreciation of poetry.
Okay, and would you be kind enough to share a poem with us?
Sure. So. This one I'm going to do is called Zakwan Papalotlis by Brenda Cardenas. The translation is Monarch Butterflies. It's now Zakwan Papalotlis is a Nahua word, which is my ancestors' language. So I'm going to share this poem. We are space. Between the black-orange blur of a million monarchs on their two-generation migration. South to Fur Crown Michoacan, where tree trunks will sprout feathers, a forest of paper-thin wings. Our Mexica cocooned the membranes of La Madre Tierra say, we are reborn, Zakwan Papalotles. Mariposas negras y aranjadas, in whose sweep the dead whisper. We are between the flicker of a chameleon's tail that turns his desert blue backbone to jade or pink sand. The snake-skinned fraternal twins of solstice and equinox, the ashen dawn, silvering dusk, la oración as it leaves the lips, the tug from sleep, the glide into dreams that husk out mestizo memory. We are one life, passing through the prism of all others, gathering color and song, cempasúchil and drum, to leave a rhythm scattered in the wind, dust tinting the tips of fingers as we slip into our new light.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was lovely.
Wow.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what's going through your mind as you read that.
For me, just the first few paragraphs when it's describing the place reminds me of my parents' homeland. My parents are from Mexico, and so for me, just feeling that description of me being in those forests that I've been to, and just thinking about all the memories that I've had there, that's what first comes to my mind when I'm thinking of when I'm thinking of the poem and all the experiences I've had there. That's I think it's one of the poems that I'm always going to remember.
Wow, that's beautiful. And so you'll be performing again tomorrow night.
Yes, I will. I'm doing three different poems. I'm one of them, Odin and Grecian Urn, I did at Nationals last year. But the other two poems that I'll be reciting are new ones.
Okay. Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about what we can expect from the evening?
Yeah, tomorrow at 4:40, we will have Selma Hawk. She's going to be playing guitar, opening up music, and then 4:45, the doors open. 5 o'clock, the competition begins, and there's going to be three rounds. So the first round, each finalist will say a poem, and then we go right into the second round, and they do that again. And then we take a 10-minute intermission, we do scoring, and then we come back, and then there's only a few finalists for that round, and then the winner gets picked after that, and then I think everybody gets to recite their poem if they hadn't gotten a chance in the third round, too. Basically, we'll be listening to 10 finalists do three poems, and it's going to be pretty great. Watching it last year, I watched her do that poem that she just recited just now, and I thought it was beautiful then, and it was even more beautiful in person. So I really recommend everyone should come to it and see it in person. It really is a moving experience to watch people recite poetry, especially when you've memorized it and you've made it your own. It's really a wonderful experience.
Absolutely. A great event, and thanks to all involved with that. Maeva Ordaz, thank you for coming on the show. And
thank you for having me.
Your art with us. Amanda Fiore, thank you for your time, mm-hmm. and we'll see you tomorrow night.
All right.
Juno afternoon, Steve Quinn will be here to highlight this weekend's Bantam Ice Hockey Tournament. We'll get an update on activities at the Zach Gordon Youth Center with guest Donnie Barras. We'll find out about Wednesday's Mudrooms. Lucy Potter and Hans Chester will be here to discuss Glacier Valley Elementary's Tlingit Learning Program, Tlingit Language Learning Program, that Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. And the weather tonight, snow shower, snow accumulation, 2 to 4 inches, lows around 28. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, highs around 31. Thursday, rain and snow likely, highs around 37. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in